This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are men and women around you who have some stories to tell. And we want to honor our veterans for their service, for the sacrifices they've made. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, boy, do we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And we're going to hear a multifaceted story today from a 93-year-old World War II veteran, a naval aviator during that period in our nation's history, and for more than 60 years, all the way back to 1950, a resident of Kingsburg, California. Kingsburg, California in the 1950s was an interesting place to be because of the Johnson brothers, Rafer and Jimmy Johnson, two of the greatest athletes ever out of California. Did you know they were good when they were coming through high school?
Oh, yeah. I knew Rafer was good before he got into high school. I knew the coach very well, and in fact, he was in the Kiwanis Club with me. I sat next to him one time, and he was doing very well in the eighth grade. So this is what the coach said. He said he told Rafer that if worked real hard all through high school, he says, you can have the decathlon someday.
Wow. Maybe that's what made him shoot for it.
Oh, I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
Well, Rafer was an unusual, just wonderful guy.
Silver medal in 1956 and gold medal in 1960 in the Olympic decathlon, and his younger brother Jimmy, an NFL Hall of Famer with the 49ers as a defensive back. And Kingsburg's still pretty proud of those brothers, huh?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, understandably so. The voice you hear is that of John Adams, not our second president. Your middle name isn't Quincy, is it?
Harvey.
Harvey, all right. Just checking. You ever think about running for president?
Not yet.
John Adams, Kingsburg, California, but originally Lindsay, California, a city that's a little bit southeast of where we are right now in Tulare County, famous for olives. People have picked those cans off their grocery store shelves, the Lindsay olives. But for you, growing up in the late 1920s and throughout the 30s, what was life like in Lindsay, California?
Excellent, as far as I was concerned. I was always very grateful to have lived through the Depression and also through the war. I thought my time was just at the perfect time. And the reason for the Depression, my gratitude there, I got to help my father and mother a little bit. I remember giving my mother a dollar, and I would mow lawns for 5 cents, 10 cents, and I had one lawn to take care of and a yard to take care of. I got 25 cents for that, and so I accumulated my money with this, and that I'd put in the pennies in a 22 gauge shell box. So I gave mother a dollar for groceries, and she took it. And actually, one time they were going hungry, but the kids never went hungry. And we found out that they were going a little bit hungry is because we always had breakfast at a certain time. And at noontime, 12 up, it was lunch. And at 6 o'clock in the evening, supper. And we all sat down together. But here was a time where mother and dad prepared the dinner for us, and they didn't sit down with us. They said that they were busy in the kitchen, and this was very strange. So we ate our dinner, and what we didn't care for, we were taught to clean everything up, but they weren't there, and we left scraps. And so they came out and took them back into the kitchen to wash the dishes. And my sister was very inquisitive, and because it was her job to wash dishes, and she was a little older than I. And so she went outside and looked through the kitchen window, and here they were eating our scraps. And that's how we knew that they weren't getting enough food, you know. But they, outside of that, we never knew it.
To fully paint that picture for those listening, you were one of six children. One of those children died pretty young. So at that time, there's five children in your home.
Five, yeah.
And your parents are making sure you eat, but they were going without food themselves.
Well, for a little bit, because our scraps weren't very much.
And it sounds like that made a pretty strong impression on you.
Still with me.
And I imagine, again, most people listening didn't live through this time, but that's what was happening in your own home. I'm sure you saw evidence of this depression throughout your community as well.
Yes, but not food-wise. And, you know, they all had the same problem, I'm sure of that. A lot of people were moving. We had neighbors moving. And so I asked Dad, when are we going to move? And he says, well, just one of these days or something like that. And anyway, finally, about a year later, we moved. He was an olive grower and an orange grower. He had lost the orange grove and another olive grove the first time, and we moved off the place. We moved about a half a mile away into a house that was our neighbor's. And then while we were there, he lost the second, the 20 acres that he planted of olives, and that was gone. So he was fortunate. I don't think it was a year later, he got a job to superintend the local cemetery, the Lindsay Strathmore Cemetery.
Hmm.
And that's where we all grew up. We were fortunate enough for him to have that job because we kids got to help him. I think we could make just a few dollars a month.
So the first thing you mentioned when I asked you about the Depression was mowing lawns for a nickel or a dime and contributing to the groceries for your family to keep food on the table.
$1.
But you had to mow 15, 20 lawns to get that dollar. And what I wanted to point out is here in 2015, we hear a kid's mowing lawns. And while it's always hard work and young men doing that today are admirable, I have a feeling that the lawnmower you were using is not something like the gas-powered or electric ones we know today.
Right. Push mower.
Push mower. No power whatsoever other than your elbow grease.
Right.
There's some teenagers listening right now who are saying, push mower? What in the world's a push mower? I've never heard of such a thing. Well, sharpen your blades and get out there, young people. So that's your childhood, and you had your three brothers and your one sister, and then you go to high school at Lindsay High School. Graduated when?
1940.
1940. And what are you thinking you're going to do with your life?
I wanted to join the Army Air Corps from, I think, sophomore year in high school.
Where did that come from?
That came from a YMCA camp at Lake Sequoia. My camp teacher went into the Army Air Corps, and I thought, that's for me. And I took an airplane ride one time when the parents were at church. I couldn't go because I had impetigo all over my face. In those days, you didn't see airplanes flying over. So here was an airplane flying over Lindsay. It was landing on the other side of Lindsay. It's obviously he was picking up passengers. It was in a field. I got on my bicycle and I went over there. I thought, well, I'm going to do this. And I didn't have my camera, so I bicycled back home and got my camera. And so $1, he took me for a flight down to Strathmore and back. So I was going to fly. I was going to go into aviation after that.
Just that one time. That's the first time you've ever been up in the air.
Yeah.
But you caught the bug.
Oh, yeah. I really did.
And for people who aren't familiar with the geography of the Central Valley, you said to Strathmore and back. That's not very far.
4 miles.
4 miles. Yeah, very close by. Strathmore would have been your arch rival in high school.
Yeah.
So from that point on, you had this desire.
Mm-hmm.
Then what'd you do about it?
Well, I needed 2 years to get into the Air Corps at that time.
This is before World War II has begun for America.
Right. But the Air Corps was for me because my mentor was an Air Corps man. He was killed shortly before I was ready to go in.
What happened?
Airplane.
An accident.
Yeah. And then my best friend was in the Navy, and he was stationed aboard the battleship Arizona.
And I want to get to that, but I want to ask you something. Sorry to interrupt. The whole reason you got interested in airplanes was this mentor you described, someone who you had been around at camp and made an impression on you. You catch the flying bug. Then before you've had a chance to pursue it, you find out he's been killed in an airplane accident. Did that discourage you at all from your aviation dreams?
Oh, no.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Didn't make you think twice?
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
No, that's what I wanted to do.
And so you mentioned your friend, best friend from Lindsay, who was on the USS Arizona, and we'll hear that whole story, but what was his name?
Harvey Sanderson.
Harvey Sanderson.
Mm-hmm.
And was he one of the reasons you got into the Navy?
No, I don't think so. It might have been a subconscious reason.
How did that happen?
I finished 1 year of college. Oh, I signed up for the CPT program, which was a government program for pilots.
Civilian pilot training.
Civilian pilot training. By the time when I got into the secondary, the war started. So I wanted to get in as soon as I could, and I wanted to go to the Pacific. I changed from the Army Air Corps thinking to the Navy Air Corps because I had a lot more chance of being sent to the Pacific than I did to Europe.
And we're going to explore that more and also learn about Harvey Sanderson and the USS Arizona Band in a little bit. But there's another aspect of this that I don't want to leave out because I've interviewed a lot of people who lived on the West Coast at that time, especially in agricultural areas like where you were in Tulare County. There were Japanese Americans who, after the attack on Pearl Harbor and after Executive Order 9066 a couple months later, they were forced from their homes into internment camps. Is that something that you saw happening there in Lindsay?
That's a shame.
Did you have some friends that happened?
Oh, sure. To? Oh, sure. I was driving a school bus for Vicelia Junior College, and we had three Japanese aboard. I've forgotten her name temporarily, but Oku was her last name. She was just a beautiful, wonderful girl. And see, the Japanese, they never got into trouble. And when they got home, they all had to work. And one thing they did, when they weren't connected with school activities, then they were home. They didn't join any other clubs or anything. So they stayed separated, and they all worked very hard, and they were all just had perfect records, really.
So you'd grown up your whole life going to school with Japanese Americans.
Oh, sure.
And then you're out of high school, and before you end up as a Navy pilot, you're driving this school bus, and then all of a sudden they're gone, or what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that's the reason I didn't finish my story there.
Yeah.
So we were all wondering what's going to happen to them, and it was a big question mark. And then all of a sudden, the next day, they weren't aboard the bus, and they were gone. And the last time she was aboard the bus, she sat right over there, and before she got out, I asked her, what's happening? And she said, we don't know yet. But when she got home, she found out. And so they just moved out. And there were lots of us who felt that was wrong. But what do I know about it? Well, in our history, that was a black spot in our history. It just definitely was.
But it sounds like you certainly empathize with what they went through and have respect for their patriotism.
Yes.
Throughout that.
Yes. Yeah. And a Japanese friend told me this afterwards. He said the very same things that I just told you, that the war made them join clubs. In other words, come in and be a part of the civilian life.
And of course, in between, while these families endured the war imprisoned in the internment camps, so many young men volunteered to fight for the very country that had locked them up. We've heard from members of the famed 442nd Regimental Combat Team, the Gopher Broke Unit here on Hometown Heroes, as well as others who served in the Pacific in the MIS, the Military Intelligence Service. And of course, all Nisei veterans were honored just a few years ago with the Congressional Gold Medal. It's good to get Mr. Adams' perspective on that situation, and we'll get more of his point of view when we come back, including a better picture of his high school best friend who remains entombed on the USS Arizona. John Adams has thought about Harvey Sanderson and visits to Pearl Harbor and also at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., which he says should be a must-see for all Americans. That's especially true for our remaining World War II vets. And as we approach the break here, a little more about an organization that makes those kind of visits possible. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. but it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.